Okay, got ya. My streaming tech recently updated, and decided to change my microphone to a microphone that doesn't even exist. So there we go. As I was saying before, I was, well, not so rudely interrupted, but didn't get going. Welcome to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host, Paul Barrow, and on today's show, we'll be discussing Backlash France, the latest wrestling news, and I'd like to talk about the recent spate of NXT releases, the draft itself, although I won't be saying much about the draft because I do not believe that much of any real importance happened. And I'd like to talk about whether or not there is still a bidding war for talent in the wrestling world. Thanks for being patient with me, guys. Well, I got that small technical problem sorted. Most frustrating. I'll try and remember that for next time this darn thing updates out of nowhere, like an RKO. So, the first piece of news that I would like to discuss pertains to, really, there were a lot of NXT releases, and I didn't recognise many of them. There are two that I recognised, one of which is Gable Stevenson, who, let's be fair, they made a big deal out of, a huge deal. They drafted him during a draft one time. They had him appear at WrestleMania. They made a very big deal, and he wasn't capable of doing the job. Or, well, he may have been physically capable. He was not mentally able to connect with professional wrestling. Kurt Angle, of course, the other Olympian that seems to have, well, not the, but gold medalist, who seems to have, he connected with it straight away. And even he said it's a massive change because of, in amateur wrestling, which is, you know, it's legit. You do not want to lie on your back. You don't want to go anywhere near your back. You'll do everything you can to not go to your back. And professional wrestling is all about going to your back. So it's very difficult to break that mindset of, no, roll to your stomach, do this, do that, and easing up. He said it, I found difficult for a little bit. He trained with Dory Funk Jr., I believe, at the Funkin' Dojo, back before there was a legitimate scene for training wrestlers, like OVW and stuff. Developmental scene, that's the word I'm trying to think of. So when we get to Gable Stevenson, there was his difficulty apparently getting used to it. People saying he wasn't very good. He appeared infrequently. There were some very, very unsavory things he was being accused of and having to defend himself against legally. So so I can understand WWE's reluctance to kind of put him on TV every week. That being said, when he got put on TV, I remember a particular match he was against Baron Corbin. At the time, not the most well-liked or well-respected of professional wrestlers. And people cheered Corbin over Gable Stevenson. So, it's all really strange to think that someone they put in a draft, someone they highlighted at pay-per-views, someone they made a very big deal of, was a non-entity when it came to the actual product. I do wonder if it'll put people off, or WWE off, from hyping guys before they know what they've got. Because they've done this before. Sin Cara, or the, you know, Mystico, as he was known before, he was Sin Cara. Huge star in Mexico, so when they hired Sin Cara, they made a huge deal about him. And then he couldn't adapt to the style, and there were several kind of botches when it comes to his spectacular entrance and stuff, and it just became sort of a meme that Sin Cara was just going to be bad. So it's all kind of you know, this isn't the first time they've hyped someone and then not got what they thought they were getting. If you remember the, I believe it was the mid-90s, they had a guy called Alex the Pug Porteau, who was, and his gimmick was he was an amateur wrestler, and apparently he'd been quite successful as an amateur wrestler. So it's not that these guys can't do it. Like, Angle did it. Of course, Brock Lesnar did it. Transitioned very well. And Alex Porteau wasn't much. He was like a lower mid-card guy at best. But it's just one of those. They hyped a guy up. He was no good. He bought baggage they didn't want. And then now he's gone. And I kind of hope they don't become gun-shy. I like it when they make a big deal out of people. I liked it when they brought Jade in and kind of made her a big deal before kind of making her appear. But I suppose even with Jade, as limited as she is, and we'll get to that later, she was a known entity. She'd been wrestling for AEW. So I totally understand that it's a very strange one. So in the chat right now, we have Fran the Cannon, Mr. Priceless, Eddie Hickey, Bonkers LFC, Robert Dinkins. Nice to see you guys. It's very busy. Always good to hear from you guys. I'm glad that you guys are here. I just thought I'd get the first piece of news out. I just think, like I said, I think that he was one of the guys that I knew about. And there's a lot of names that are apparently on the new Roku show they have, WWE Next Gen. A lot of people on that show just got released. So I don't know if that show's over, because it hasn't appeared in the UK that I can find, because I have a Roku television, or like a Roku built into my TV, and it's not on there. Like, it'll say here are shows similar to WWE Next Gen, but interesting that hasn't appeared over here, and apparently everyone in it has basically been fired already. So not the most successful way to recruit talent, I imagine. The second name that I heard of from this group there's a bit of controversy. It originally came out from PW Insider that Drew Gulak had been let go. Then, at last night's WWE Backlash press conference, Triple H was asked whether or not Drew Gulak had been let go or had his contract lapsed. And they said that Fightful was reporting one thing and PW Insider was reporting another. Triple H said, well, if you're going to have sources, use good ones, which upset people at these two establishments. I never know what to call a something like that. But I've got a small piece here from most of my news usually comes from Fightful. I consider them usually a decent source. So at the WWE post show press conference, Triple H answered a question regarding Drew Gulak, noting he was not released by the company. Fightful select Sean Ross Sapp and Corey Brennan have confirmed with multiple WWE and NXT sources that Gulak is actually still with the company, but was informed they would not be re-signing him once his deal expires next month. In regards to recent claims of sexual misconduct made by Ronda Rousey, Brennan is told that this instigated an investigation by WWE into the incident and Gulak as a whole. So in Ronda Rousey's autobiography, Our Fight, she said that he pulled at her sweatpants or something like that. Plenty of other things. She goes into a lot of stuff in WWE, and I do intend to read that. I didn't want to read that so close to the Becky Lynch autobiography. I want to take a break from. I don't like to do two or three biographies on the trot, but I will eventually be giving you a review of what I thought about our fight, the Ronda Rousey, the second Ronda Rousey autobiography. The first one mainly deals with her Olympic and UFC career. So. From those who spoke to in NXT, the belief is that Gulak's public response to Rousey's claims only made things worse for the former Cruiserweight champion, but was not the determining factor in his decision to not bring him back. In asking around with talent in NXT, several talent made claims to Brennan that Gulak was a bully who would often target injuries during matches with talent that were recovering from minor injuries at the time. One talent claimed that during a match with Gulak, the former No Quarter Catch crew member purposefully dislocated a previously dislocated finger, while another claimed that Gulak would intimidate talent into not reporting the incidents. Fightful also learned of an incident during an NXT taping last year where Gulak was verbally reprimanded by Shawn Michaels and NXT coaches for intentionally spiking an opponent during a match. So, like, spiking is dropping someone on their head. Obviously not something you want to do. People have died from that. Or repeated spikings or, you know, general wear and tear can kill people in the ring. I mean, Ted DiBiase's father died from that. Ted DiBiase's senior's father, Mike DiBiase. Misora Misawa died from, I believe it was a backdrop driver. And he'd just taken so much abuse to his neck that he died in the ring. It's that kind of thing that you like don't spike someone on purpose. One NXT talent who worked with Gulak noted that he was odd in the sense that he would often test talents to see how they react to his bullying. In regards to the Triple H comments, we'll provide as much transparency as possible. It was reiterated to us by WWE and Triple H that the comments weren't intended to be directed at Fightful or PW Insider. Whether anyone chooses to believe that is up to them, but Fightful received numerous apologies. We were told Triple H's particular issue was that Ronda Rousey's accusations of Gulak grabbing her sweatpants string were not the contributing factor to Gulak's departure. We will discuss this situation more. We're told that PW Insider received apologies as well. And we'll obviously know whether those are in good faith soon. So Drew Gulak is still technically under contract to WWE right now, but that's not going to be the case in a month. I always think it's terrible when you hear about someone who takes advantage of people in the ring. I recently read a story who I can't bring it up verbatim because I literally read it online about 30 seconds before this show, and it's Cody Rhodes was saying that he was not a fan of Drew Gulak because Drew Gulak got upset at him during his first run, I believe, or somewhere in the Indies, because Cody had a line and Drew Gulak did not have a line for autographs, and there was a lot of comments made. So when the top guy in the company has previously come out and said basically the guy's an arsehole, you might have some trouble getting work later on. Now, Eddie Hickey saying, I see Drew go to TNA. Mr. Price is responding with, I think MLW take him. I mean, they took Riddle, Bobby Fish, even Enzo, Real One Amore. So there's a place for potential and problematic people. Well, yeah, I mean, that is a weird one. I always kind of dug the MLW aesthetic for a bit, but they do tend to just hire someone if they've kind of got a name and they can afford it. So yeah, those are the two that I can really think of. If any of the other names are, from my understanding, they were mainly used for WWE Next Gen. So I do look forward to actually being able to see that show at some point. If it ever comes out in the UK or it's on the network or anything kind of that. But considering it was highly touted for Roku, then for it to not turn up on Roku, I was like, okay, that's weird. So, in not so unbelievable news, we have Seth Rollins re-signed with WWE. WWE sources have confirmed to Fight for Select Sean Ross Sapp that Seth Rollins is to remain in WWE for years to come as re-signed with the company. As has been the case for most of the re-signings, we're told that it will be a multi-year deal for big money. They're not going to let him go, said one source close to WWE and Rollins of his contract talks. Rollins told Fightful in February that he wanted to remain with WWE and believed they would get a deal done. One WWE higher-up told us that while they wish the deal had been done sooner, the one they nailed down ensures that Rollins will be with the company until his 40s. WWE has got deals done with Finn Balor and Drew McIntyre in recent weeks. Damian Priest's new contract was also announced recently. Rollins had big outside interests, but we're not sure if offers were made from outside WWE. Rollins' deal was set to expire in June. He's currently signed up with a knee injury that required surgery, but he was included in the WWE draft. So, I don't think that this is very surprising. Seth's always been a company guy. It's always seen that he wanted to work in WWE. I expect, as Fran says, I was expecting Rollins and Lynch's deals to be sorted at roughly the same time. I expect to hear Lynch's in a couple of days. There's no way she's leaving. Unless someone offers her, like, we'll let you stay home with your child and you come in for, like, two times a week, then it's all very weird. It's all, you know, I can't see her leaving. She doesn't want to leave. That she's said as much. But I expect Becky Lynch's deal to come out pretty soon. Now, speaking of people who got signed and have not got signed, and this is basically the theme for today's news. This is mainly what I've got. Ethan Page is no longer with AEW or Ring of Honor. Page had been a regular on RHTV before disappearing from the show in recent months. However, he'd increased his independent bookings and started promoting Alpha One Wrestling again. On May 2nd, he was removed from the AEW roster. Page. Sources Fightful Select have spoken with said that Page was looking to leave AEW as far back as February. He was slated for an ROH TV title feud before visa issues with Kyle Fletcher briefly delayed them. Word within AEW and other companies was that Page is no longer with AEW or that his departure is a formality. So, here's something I want to talk about, because we've also had this weekend, Danhausen has won, a bit briefly, the GCW World Championship. He was screwed out of it by their new GM, Matt Cardona. And I'm just one. I've sat here over the last couple of days and thought, you know, WWE have hired, they've got Finn Balor and they've got Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins, and I can only imagine that Becky Lynch is a formality. Has the tide turned? Is it going to be that guys aren't going to want to sign with AEW now? Because when you do sign with AEW, you don't get used. Like, Ethan Page is a very good wrestler. I like Ethan Page a great deal. His YouTube channel is always a good laugh as well. He's got a lot of personality. I just find it really interesting because, like, there was a time when he was on TV, and you could say the same with Sean Spears. There was a time when they were on TV and they were getting used, and as AEW has piled on more and more talent, and don't get me wrong, they have some great talent, but does it mean that people in a certain situation are not going to, say you're a top guy in TNA, It would seem like you would have gone, I can go to AEW, they've got a bigger TV program, I'll get seen by more people. And if you sign that AEW contract, there's not a guarantee you're going to get used, and you might get pushed onto ROH, which I would not be happy about, because you're probably being seen by more people in TNA, which is what you want to do. You, I imagine if you're young, you're athletic, you want to wrestle, that's kind of it. You want to wrestle. You don't want to, you don't just want to collect a paycheck. You know, this isn't the era of, oh, I'm just happy to be here. Not when you've got so many companies. You've got MLW, you've got NWA, you've got TNA, you've got AEW, you've got WWE. Those are just off the top of my head. GCW. There's a lot of places you can go and work now. And yeah, not all of them have TV, but you can make yourself something. You can become... Look at Matt Cardona or Danhausen. They were making money hand over fist off merch, and Matt Cardona's launched his own figure company, and his merch is ridiculous. And I'd hate to think... Danhausen got teased when he's come back from injury with a lot of, I think it was Halloween 3 kind of vignettes. And then he turns up, he stands in the corner for someone, and you don't see him again. Ever. I don't think we're going to see him again. I think he's done. I think he's waiting for his contract to run out. But he was selling merchandise, a lot of merchandise, before he came to AEW. So are you then going, well, why am I going to go to AEW to not appear on TV, to not broaden my fan base, to not get my face out there more? Why am I going when I can do this on the indies and make more money that way? And yes, it's cool to have guaranteed income, but if what you want to do is work, if what you want to do is make a bigger name for yourself, so hopefully you get noticed and then get used, is it dangerous to be like, oh, I'll go to AEW and hopefully they'll use me? I like AEW. AEW put on some great matches and stuff, but there's a certain level of talent that get bought in, get used big for about a month, and sometimes you just don't see again. Like, who was Ethan Page's tag partner in the middle of the year? It's Scorpio Sky. He was a big deal for a bit now. Granted, he keeps hurting himself, so I can understand like him constantly being on and off TV. But I can't see, if he was healthy, I can't see him being used too much more. Brian Cage was a big TNA star and doesn't really get used all that much. It must be frustrating to think, I'm ready to go, I've got the talent, but you've only got so much TV time and you keep hiring more people. We've got Mr. Priceless saying Danhausen is over in the UK in a few months. He's doing progress in July. He's doing more on indies than being on TV. Exactly. AEW down to one page now. Brian Cage's knees are knocking. Mr. Priceless, Scorpio Sky injured. SCU no more, Men of the Year no more, no North Reunion TNA, where Josh Alexander is a bigger position, he's a world champion, he's top guy now, you can't really go back and reform the North, which is, it's a shame, because like I said, Ethan Page, I'm wondering, is he going to be like the first of like many? They're not even running house shows, they're expecting you to go out and get your own business. If you're going to have a roster this big, start running more shows where you're just going out to places and under the AEW banner, you know. It's a hard one. Fan the Cannon in the chat coming up saying, it doesn't help when they're cutting TV. There's no Collision this week. That's true. I mean, I'm all for them, like, getting out of the way of a big sporting event. Was it the NBA this week? I don't know. I'm all for, like, don't try and compete with something you know is just going to destroy you. But at the same time, I fully expect that Rampage is going to get tacked onto the end of Dynamite the next time their TV rights are up. Nobody watches Rampage, but you might stick around for Rampage if it's hour three of Dynamite. I don't really want another 3-hour wrestling program during the week, but... I could certainly see it. Mr. Priceless, I mean, look at me, Big Bill. No longer with Ricky Starks, so it seems. That's because Ricky Starks is gone. To my mind, Ricky Starks is gone. They haven't said anything. I think they're just waiting for his contract to run out. There is no way he doesn't do a Shawn Spears. He's a Cody boy. I see him going directly to NXT the moment he can. He's got a look WWE love. He's got a certain amount of mic skills. I can't stop seeing as Bruce Forsyth after OSW talked about it the other day, which is Old School Wrestling Review on YouTube. They've got some good videos. But I certainly see Ricky Starks, who is a WWE-style performer, going to WWE as soon as this contract's up. And that's kind of what I mean. Are people now going to be like, WWE is now hot? It's not like it was when AEW started, when AEW was new and WWE was tired and old and being run by a senile possible sex offender, allegedly. It's not the hot new property. It's not the thing that everyone is choosing it because it's not WWE. Now WWE have kind of rebuilt their image. I know that there's still problematic stuff going on. I haven't, I haven't put that into the news, but, you know, they successfully or not, to a lot of people, have been able to say, oh, we've got rid of all the problematic stuff that was in the company. And I can see young wrestlers who are not getting time in AEW seeing if WWE will take them. We've got Bonkers asking, is Ricky Starks leaving AEW? To be fair, I've got no official news on that. I can't see him sticking around with these constant, like, let's push him, let's not, let's let him have a match with so-and-so, but he can't win. Let's let him get into an endless feud with Chris Jericho, where nobody comes along as good. We've got Mr. Priceless, the new Rock, the Rick. Then we've got Mr. Priceless again. Nice to see him, absolute. Eddie Hickey. What will be the best future wrestling promotion, WWE or AEW? Anything can happen. It all depends. For all we know, this Netflix deal could happen in December. Netflix could decide, we hate you, but we've got you for the next 3 years. WWE could go too far. AEW could go too far. AEW could get a monster. They could get onto a monster cable company now that WWE are going streaming. A lot could happen. I think AEW will be around because Tony's got the passion for it. The thing I think you've got to think about is, it's this. Are talent going to stick around with either of them? If, let's say, a load of other stuff comes out and it turns out, and this is just me hypothesizing, you know, it could come out a load of stuff in WWE is completely rotten to the core and people could get turned off. It could turn out that AEW lose a lot of their talent because they're not on TV enough. Anything could happen. I personally like both companies. Different things in both companies. I like TNA when I can remember it's on. To be honest, between trying to catch AEW and WWE every week, the amount they're on, TNA and MLW, and it isn't like it was a few years back when WWE was so rotten that I was like, I'm going to catch clips on YouTube of that and try and catch MLW instead. It's not possible for even me, a person who runs a podcast about wrestling, to to watch everything. It's just not. I mean, the whole Joshi scene, I would love to get more involved in that with Stardom and stuff like that. But it's just, there's just too much. It's too much of a good thing. Fran the Cannon, but WWE can only take so many or they become the next AEW. Do you jump only to end up on Level Up? That is the thing. Could we be waiting and a third company turn up? An ECW, if you will. Because, I mean, I suppose TNA is technically the ECW, but TNA is in such a rotten state with its TV and stuff that you're like, to me, TNA is damaged goods. It's hard to go back to when you know its history. And it's been doing much better with not putting just total crap on, apparently. But it's just hurt. I'd like to think a third company could come up and establish itself and we get a really healthy industry. You know what I mean? But that requires a lot more money than anybody realises. Robert Dinkins saying, Hulk Hogan ruined TNA. Oh, Robert Dinkins, I think TNA was done a long time before Hogan. Hogan hastened its demise, but when you're sitting there and you're watching it back in the day, this is like 2007, and you're like, oh, this is a good match. Let's see who runs in. And every time somebody runs in, because they were afraid to put anybody over, and for other people to lose. And then the gimmick matches were so convoluted. TNA had a lot of problems before Hogan. Hogan didn't help at all. Hogan made things even worse. But TNA was already in a lot of trouble before then, in my opinion. Eddie Hickey saying, WWE versus AEW versus New Japan Pro Wrestling, maybe? New Japan are in trouble, in my opinion. They don't have the guys they had. The guys they had have gone to AEW. You know, Okada's in AEW, flipping. Their main championship is held by an AEW guy. They've got to be in a rebuilding phase. And they can do it. They've done it before. But it'll take them some years to come back and be like, this guy's a star. Yeah, they've got to... Tanahashi, but he's the president and his knees are held together by, you know, sticky tape and hope. And who's the Tranquilo guy whose name I can't think of right now? You know who I'm talking about. But he's they never struck with, oh come on, Naito. Yes, thank you so much, Fran. They never struck with Naito early, and he's beaten up as well. Like, big American stars aren't going there anymore. You're not getting someone like a Chris Jericho going to New Japan. They're going to AEW. So you can't rely on that. Your homegrown stars have all left. They now need to be in a rebuilding phase where they build new stars. I think they can do it, but I don't think they're in the race. Fran has also said VMW, Vince McMahon Wrestling, got that money from selling his stock, burning a hole in his pockets. He won't go back to wrestling, I don't think. I just can't see. He might try and start a... I don't know. He's trying to make a football, hasn't he? He might do that. He might try hockey. Although I don't think he likes hockey. I know nothing. I'm not saying anything about any kind of judgment that might be coming. But what's to stop him just leaving? Going to another country. I mean, he's got a good relationship with Saudi Arabia. Robert Dinkins, imagine if Vince buys TNA. I can't see it. TNA is damaged goods. It's got a name, but nobody... It's not a name people look back on and go like... It's always like, it was amazing 10 years ago. It's never like, it's amazing now. Mr. Prices, Russo Pro, all the swerves, massive heel factions, swerves out the Yazoo, bro. That was TNA back in the day. Vince buying TNA at Suck, Eddie Higgy. I totally agree. I don't mean to be disparaging to TNA. I think the product they've got going on is a nice little product. It's just, I think it's going to be very hard for them to grow. They've got their hardcore fans. And I guess if, like, if Vince bought it, there would just be such an influx of cash. And I'm sure people would work with him. I'm sure he's got some people who would work with him. Like, I don't know if the people in NBC that he used to know and be friends with are still there. But I just don't. I don't think Vince is the one. But I've never understood. Well, especially now that WWE are going onto Netflix. Why hasn't one of the major networks started a wrestling company? Like Universal NBC, their top programming for years was Raw. And we've seen that to a degree a network can run a wrestling company. A bit bad, they did it badly when it was done, but WCW was owned by Turner at one point. So maybe one of those boys TNA or boys MLW, or I could see that happening, because soon AEW will be the only thing you don't have to have a subscription for. As far as I know, I'm not entirely sure what kind of package TNT and all those are on. Television works very differently over there. But I think the Netflix deal is going to be very, very profitable for WWE, and I think it's going to make them a lot of new viewers. But it could leave a hole open for a new company. And as we're saying, with people like Ethan Page going, there might be enough talent for a new company. Fran the Cannon, Hogan, WrestleTalk even produced his new theme song on a recent video. I believe that was Cultaholic. That theme song is amazing. It's Cultaholic. They use AI to produce new wrestler theme songs, and it's hilarious. It's like an AI program just creates a diss track on Hulk Hogan. It's incredible. There's one where they turn disco into it's a disco song. They turn that into for Gunther. Bonkers LFC, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s company, if you got one. He's been talking about starting a company for, feels like about 20 years now. I don't think he'll ever do it. It's a shame, because I think he'd like to, but he must know, like, I think the last thing I knew he was in, and this just shows my kind of fandoms, is he was a voice on Star Wars Rebels, one of the main voices, but that was the last gig I knew he was a huge part of. So I have no idea how his money's going. Obviously, he's married to Sarah Michelle Gellar. She must have money coming in too. But her last big project only lasted a single season. So if I were them, I wouldn't be taking the risk on wrestling. Court Bauer, who runs MLW, has been running it for a long time, but he runs that thing on a shoestring budget. They tie young wrestlers into contracts 4 years for very little money. It's a bit of a not a dodgy practice, but when you look at someone like MJF, who was so good and couldn't go anywhere for years, or Alex Hammerstone couldn't go anywhere for years, or Jacob Fatu couldn't go anywhere for years, so well, they're stuck there. Yes, Fran the Cannon, Kane and Jarrus in Rebels. Caleb Doon, that's the character's real name. I keep messing them up, don't I? One's the other. But yeah, it's a very dangerous game to get into pro wrestling, because it's so expensive. It's so expensive and so risky. There was a company many years ago in the UK called 1PW. I believe it's came back and closed again since. But I used to go there. I used to go to their shows, and the amount of money to get fans to come in, it'd be like, we've got 30 foreign stars and a couple of British guys. And they were great shows, but I remember a friend of mine would go down for the weekend. We'd do both shows on the weekend, and we were having a whale of a time. And I just remember being like, this is great. And I was like, you enjoy it while you can, because this will last maybe another year, because he was running it from the profits of his merchandise and toy store, Stephen Gauntley, I believe. And they were great shows, but you had, like, it was basically a TNA show with even more foreign talent on it, and then some very good British wrestlers. But when they had to downsize and it became mainly British wrestlers, and they weren't running the Doncaster Dome, they were running a much smaller venue, like those crowds weren't turning up. Robert Dinkins asking, how do you feel about Rev Pro UK? This is the thing. I would really love to follow Rev Pro. I really would. They seem like they've got tremendous talent. But again, I'm watching 10 hours of wrestling between two companies, and that's without pay-per-views. I'm watching 3 Raw, 2 SmackDown, Dynamite's 2, Rampage is 1, and Collision is 2. Like, that's... I don't get how much I love wrestling. For me, that's enough. I'd love to follow the UK scene. I used to go to a lot more live UK shows. It's just not... it's not feasible anymore at the moment for me. Mr. Price is saying, 1PW was a UK PWG, to say it for the time. I'd agree there, but PWG was... PWG kept it to one building. They knew it was going to sell out every time. They weren't bringing in guys from another continent, so it must be cheaper to run. They were certainly bringing in... well, I suppose they were... no, Canada's on the same continent as the US. Mr. Price, this Rev Pro I know well. They have links to New Japan Pro Wrestling, CMLL, and they're doing Fantastica Mania in a few weeks. Look, I'd love to go, but again, getting down to London, getting a hotel, staying there every time there's a show on. It's the same reason I don't follow Progress like I should. I follow Progress when they come to Birmingham. Which is my home base. But yeah, I honestly think there is room for another big company. I've got very, very distracted from the news. Well, that's basically the news about all these hires and stuff. I just found it a really interesting... source of like, where did these talents go? Because it was, at one point, it would have been like, oh, Drew's definitely going to AEW. Why wouldn't he? Because Vince is running things terribly. And same with, I won't say for Seth, and I won't say for Becky. They've always seemed like they were WWE all the way through. But Fergal Devitt, whose name, oh God, Finn Balor, for God's sake. Finn Balor, I could have seen him maybe going. I really could. Thanks, Mr. Price. I did get there in the end. But and you are right. Progress and Rev Pro do live stream their shows. They have a subscription. But it's just so much. It's so much wrestling. And if I do hear of a great match, I will go out of my way and try and watch it. But it used to be that WWE was so bad when it came to the in-ring product that I barely watched that and had loads of time to watch, like, Rev Pro or flipping... or Progress or MLW or any of that kind of thing. Eddie Hickey, remember Tezzy's homework? Your homework should be practicing people's names. I refuse. Because, I'm just chatting to friends, I remember off the top of my head, I honestly believe I this little blue light on my camera, hello there, and I it goes out of my head. And besides, you know, that's what I've got you guys to keep on my toes for. Mr. Prices, that don't work for Paul, brother. Don't you dare equate me to Hulk Hogan, especially with his new theme song. I have reasonable creative control over this program. Actually, I have total creative. But yes, speaking of nothing that I just talked about. There you go, Fran. Thank you very much. I'm really just testing your knowledge. See, Bonkers LFC saying TNA Under Siege was on Friday. Had I remembered the Collision wasn't on, I might have tried to watch that, but I honestly didn't realise Collision wasn't on. Mr. Priceless, all the creative control, you say. No Harris Boy is necessary. I hope not. I would be somewhat mortified to be associated with the Harris Boys. Nice to see you, Robert Dinkins. Take care. I'll see you hopefully next week. Yes, I definitely do not need to be associated with the Harris Brothers and their tattoos. But yeah, that's mainly what I wanted to talk about. But what is your guys' opinions on talent? Do you think that it will just be like WWE versus WCW, where they'll just swap over and over again? Because there was a time where I think it was like Greg Valentine would just, or Sid would be another one, that would just swap. He'd just go back and forth and back and forth because he had the look, had the name, so he'd be on WCW, then he went to WWF, then he went back to WCW, and he was never out of work for the big two. Now, I don't think someone like Ethan Page, who I think is great, he doesn't have the name value to make bouncing back and forth a reality yet. Now, he could gain it. Let's say he does go to WWE and he becomes a huge star. Then going back to AEW for more money makes sense and he'll be used more. But it's kind of the mid-level. It's kind of like the Greg the Hammer Valentine's and the Bossman's. They'd bounce back and forth as well, and it wouldn't be as big a splash. But really, really weird to think that we're now in a position where WWE are now looking kind of appealing, especially if they can put on shows like they did yesterday in Lyon, France, when they put on WWE Backlash, or as I'm going to continue to call it, WWE Backlash France, because that France was in the logo, so I'm calling it WWE Backlash France. I'm going to talk about the show, and I'm going to go through the matches. I'm going to tell you what I thought about them. So now I'm going to start with the opener, which is Team RKO, which is what I'm assuming they're called. Which is Randy Orton and Kevin Owens versus the bloodline of Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. And from the... To be fair, I saw some of the pre-show, and from the pre-show, which, keep in mind, is just shots of the arena and people telling you this thing is going to be great. That's all the pre-shows are for WWE, which is why I usually skip them, to be honest. I don't usually tune in too early to watch hype videos I've seen 3 or 4 times already. But this crowd elevated every aspect of this show to a level I don't believe we've seen in years. And I say that knowing that Backlash Puerto Rico was an incredibly hot crowd. Clash of the Castle was an incredibly hot crowd. Their plan to go outside of the US for B shows seems to be working. So we start with Randy Orton and Kevin Owens versus the Bloodline. And it starts, and they immediately go into a brawl. And I was thinking, okay, they'll settle this down, they'll settle this down. And it never settled down, and Pierce came out, basically. No, it wasn't Pierce, it was Oh, now I'm paranoid about doing it. Magnus came out and said, you know, if I'm not going to let this turn into just a DQ, there's no DQ, you do what you want. And it's to Nick Aldis, thank you. And they turned it into a brawl. And this was a really fun brawl because the crowd, again, I will talk about this crowd more than I'll probably talk about the wrestling. This crowd were molten hot. And I feared that the opener was going to burn them out. And it was a great brawl. There was a lot of crazy spots. And at the end, Kevin Owens drove Tama Tonga via a brainbuster or something, like some top rope suplex thing through tables, through chairs. He does that kind of thing, and the referee was almost dragged out of the ring by newest signee Tongaloa. Now I say that because if you see fan videos of the incident, he misses his cue and the referee has to fall over himself. And then half a second later, Tangaloa drags him out of the ring. It's quite funny. But that is looking like the new Bloodline. Fran the Cannon, we'd all been speculating on Jacob Vaku and I can never say Hukileo's name and forgotten about Tangaloa. Do you know what that is? New Japan never said Tangaloa's contract had run out. They never gave him a farewell tour or anything. He was very much like not really said to be gone. So I was expecting Jacob Fatu. I think the crowd were expecting Jacob Fatu. And it's almost as like when he first reveals himself, the crowd are like, oh. Now, this reunites the Guerrillas of Destiny. But he was Hunico in WWE. Camacho, not Hunico. Oh, I feel so bad. So, we've got Mr. Priceless returning to WWE after nearly 10 years. Quite funny to see the TNA faction in the ring of Drew McIntyre, LA Knight, and now Tangaloa. Mika in TNA and for me, Camacho in the E, together in 2024. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool they've got another member for this Bloodline, this what I will call Bloodline Wolfpack or the Evil Bloodline or Bloodline Dark or whatever they're going to end up being called. I think they're going to be called the Rogue Bloodline because I'm pretty sure Michael Cole said that on commentary. I love the fact that Paul Heyman seems terrified of the group he's supposedly aligned with. I think that's very much very fun. I hope that we get Jacob Fatu soon. But this was a great brawl followed by some solid continuation of a story. Mr. Priceless, funny Big E mentioned Guerrillas of Destiny on the pre-show by name, not realising a foreshadowing. Guerrillas of Destiny versus the Usos, sign me up. I don't know, this isn't the... I'm sorry, but if you've seen the work Tangaloa was putting in New Japan by the end. I mean, I've only seen a few clips, but like, I know there's a gif out there of him throwing some quote-unquote strikes at Okada that are really funny. There's the botch of the 619 where he gets his own leg caught in the ropes. I have no idea if he's doing that to entertain himself or he's having a bad couple of days, but to miss his cue and his opening as well, it's not the greatest of looks. You know, and the guy could tear me apart and use me as a toothpick, no doubt. I'm not saying anything about the guy's physical presence or that kind of thing. I think that, you know, if you're going to reform that team, cool. He's another big, imposing guy. I think that's the way you do it. And we've got people in the chat. Fan the cannon. So I'm picturing down the line, Usos in a turned Roman versus Bloodline Wolfpack. I think you're missing someone from that. A couple of people from that match, Fran. I want to see the... Let's call them the Bloodline Wolfpack because I just think that's funny. So we've got Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, Jacob Fatu. On the other side, you've got Roman, the Usos, and the Honorary Use. I think you put Sami Zayn back in there. Fran the Cannon saying, summertime solo matches in New Japan aren't that hot either. Fair. It's just... He didn't get memed, like, you know what I mean? I hope it was just like, I'm out of here anyway, so let's not flipping go for it. I want to see, if you're going to put Jacob Fatu in this bloodline, I want to see Sami Zayn on the other side. That original, like, family having, I keep doing... For anyone just listening to this audio break, I keep doing the Dr. Evil finger quotations. So if my voice changes, it's probably me doing that. So Mr. Priceless, Roman, Usos, Sammy, KO versus Rock, the Grillers of Destiny, Jacob and Solo, 10-man tribal warfare war games equals all the fuckery. Yeah, that'd be insane. But do you save War Games till Survivor Series? I was about to ask a very silly question, I think, and say, do you think they can stretch this out to a Survivor Series? Then I remembered the entire Bloodline storyline in the first place was, like, stretched out at least a little more, a little more than it should have been. I think they can definitely stretch it till Survivor Series. The match itself was very good. I thought the match that we're actually talking about is really cool. But again, elevated by the crowd. So, Mr. Priceless, give me a solo slash Fatu tag run, a big lads unit or contra unit to steal an MLW line. Fran the Cannon with Paul Heyman in a forklift, and it's for custody of him. Oh, the thing. Paul Heyman should be in a shark cage. Go proper WCW. But like the best part about this is that Paul doesn't want to be there. There was a bit just after this match. Well, it wasn't just after this match, but. Just before Jey Uso's match, where this version of the Bloodline walked past him, and you flipping Paul Heyman may as well have leant towards him and gone, please help me, get me out of this situation. I am in such a bad state. Because at one point, at the end of the match, which, by the way, the Bloodline win, at the end of the match, they are screaming at Paul Heyman to put his finger up to acknowledge the tribal chief, whoever that. And Paul Heyman also revealed that he took Roman Reigns out of the draft. So does that mean Roman will betray it? See, Eddie, I believe Paul Heyman did that because he cares about Roman in a weird way. They can show that footage of Roman and Paul Heyman hugging at the top of the ramp. At WrestleMania, they could show that stuff and say, like, Paul actually cares. Like, the only thing Solo Sikoa cares about is domination and hurting people and being number one. But you're already getting We Want Roman chants from the crowd as a way to get to Solo Sikoa. So I think you're gonna learn that, like, no, Paul cares about Roman. You can always... Paul Heyman's so good, you can turn him babyface for a bit and then turn him back. Swerve, the Bloodline Wolfpack under the learning tree, and Jericho is their tribal chief. Oh God, why do you do this to me, Fran? Like, every now and then you just drop something in there that hurts my heart. Eddie Hickey. That's what the Bloodline should be. Brutality. Not having just talking segments. I can see that this version of the Bloodline, yes. But the reason the Bloodline was so successful was kind of the... At least initially, it was kind of like Roman being like, I don't want to do this, but I've got to do this. I'm going to beat you up and force you to acknowledge me. That's what it became, because it was just Roman beating up his cousins. Like, it would have just died. And it was, to me, the thing that got me really interested was Sammy coming in, because it was like, okay, this thing started as comedy and now it's the most captivating thing on your show. But I think if you just use them like the NWO right now and they just destroy everyone until Roman has to come back, I think that's what you should do with them. These guys do not have the mic skills that that even Roman has. They don't have the charisma, and they won't have Paul Heyman in their corner to cut good promos for them. The best thing about this is not one of them are part-time. You know, these guys are going to be hit every week. So you're not going to have that thing where Roman isn't here, so this week's segment is pretty boring. So yeah, this new Bloodline, let's wait for... Still waiting on Jacob Fatu, but I can see it coming. Then we had, I believe... There are only 5 matches on this card. I'm really digging that, and I also dug the fact that this took place in France, so it started at 6 p.m. for us, which is very cool. I believe the second match was the triple threat. Yes, the women's triple threat between the champion Bayley versus Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton. I thought this was very good. I thought this was very, very good. Again, the crowd going utterly insane. Everything seems to matter more when your crowd are that hot. Not in a huge stadium. Not in a huge stadium. But possibly the loudest crowd I've ever heard through TV. I thought this was a very good match. I thought there were lots of near falls, lots of breakups. I thought that Tiffany Stratton, who I nearly put down as going to win, and I didn't. Bayley retained, but it was a triple threat match full of motion. It was a lot of people breaking off to do something. There was a lot of things where someone would get knocked out and then other two people would run a sequence, which is usual kind of usual triple threat philosophy, is to do that so that your crowd aren't wondering where the third person is all the time. But it was done in such a way that you didn't notice that the third person wasn't always there. Mr. Price is saying all three over as Rover. Tiffy time going international, no shock. She'll be champion by the end of the year. Easy. I would have put the belt on her now if it hadn't been Bayley, who just got it at Mania. If it had been anybody else, if it had been Becky or Charlotte or, you know, any of the big, like, established multi-time champions, I would have said, yeah, put it on Tiff. The thing is, with Bayley's entire storyline was like she never got the Mania thing. So to give it her and then have her immediately lose it makes her look very bad. Whereas if you did that to anybody else, it would have been like, well, they've had it so many times. They've main evented WrestleMania. I think for Bayley, it's different for me anyway. But I really thought this was very well done. I thought this was a very good match. Possibly, in terms of in-ring, this is possibly the best match of the night. I don't think any of the matches in this show were bad. I think everyone worked very hard. I just think that everything was elevated because of the crowd. I really enjoyed this. I think the right result. Tiffany Stratton looked like a star. Naomi continues to look great, considering she's not the third wheel in this, but you can tell eventually it's going to turn into Tiffany versus Bayley, and Naomi will kind of be pushed out of it, I think. But I thought this was my favourite match of the night. Everything got, because there's only five matches, everything got time, nothing felt rushed. Eddie Hickey, honestly, too many championships. What Bayley got, she doesn't deserve anymore. Or what Becky got, sorry, she doesn't deserve anymore. I disagree. I think we talked about this last week, but giving it to everyone, a certain contingent seemed to want to give the championship to Liv Morgan off a Battle Royal win. To me, that's not a great way to create a heel for your returning babyface, Rhea Ripley, to face. What you need to do is give it to someone massively established. Have that massively established person put Liv over. Then Liv becomes much more of a threat to Rhea. Especially if she nicks a boyfriend. You know, Dominic can say, I know all of Rhea's weaknesses. I've stood at ringside every week for a couple of years now. I know everything. I know every button to press. Talk about his dad. Talk about how his family hated me. That's talking about Rhea Ripley Rhea Ripley was the studying Dom's weak points. It'd be talk about her knee. Talk about the fact that she didn't win this. She didn't win that. She doesn't think she deserves this. Talk about how her entire facade is fake or something like that. That she's really still this scared little girl from the Mae Young Classic. You could do loads of stuff like that. I can't believe I got mixed up then. You could do a lot of stuff like that. But that's for some time. I just think if you want to establish Liv, having a win it in a battle royal, nah. You need to be a pay-per-view, you need to be a long match, you need her to decisively beat someone rather than, I was the last person to survive. Maybe that's just me. So yeah, Bayley goes over in this. She pinned Naomi. And Naomi immediately, I was like, is Naomi going to turn heel? Don't turn heel. She just gave her a hug, and I was like, that's cool. All right, they're still friends. It's cool that they can do that, and it still work. It still doesn't feel like they're setting up for a heel turn. It was pretty cool. And then we got a singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. And I hate to keep talking about the crowd. I love to keep talking about this crowd. This crowd are great. Jey Uso versus Damian Priest. Jey Uso was in the crowd. Everyone was bouncing. Everyone was yeeting. It was loud. It was good stuff. Very, very good. Then the match happened. I like both of these guys. But doesn't feel like a big deal. Like, I like Damian Priest, I like Jey Uso, but Jey Uso didn't have a great match at Mania, by his own admission. Did not have a great show at Mania. Damian Priest cashed in at Mania, and I'm sort of sitting there being, okay. That's a weird one, because I like both the people involved, but it did not feel like, you know, maybe a Raw main event. There was actual interference from the Judgment Day carrying on their story, because Damian Priest does not want there to be actual interference, but they basically saved the title for him. Maybe I'm being too hard on this match. I just thought it just gave me a big whiff of, we've given this guy the title, and now we've put in there against another guy we don't want to lose. So, in the end, neither of them look great. I can't deny Jey Uso's connection with the crowd. As Mr. Price says, there's yeeting with the phones, because everyone turned their phones on. So it was a sea of a sea of light just bouncing up and down. It's really cool. One of the better entrances I've seen done for Jay. I did feel sorry for the people directly in front of him because they didn't see he was in the crowd, so they were filming the entranceway, and took them a while to realise, oh, he's like right behind us. It was quite funny. But the match wasn't, again, not a bad match. The guys worked hard. I just never got the feeling. And the same with much of this pay-per-view. I didn't think Damian Priest was going to lose. I didn't think Bayley was going to lose. I didn't think the Bloodline were going to lose. If you go back to my predictions from last week, I'm pretty sure I got all of these right. Not to toot my own horn, but toot, as Arn Anderson might say. It's a very strange thing to sort of sit here and be like, yeah, good match, but it's for the world championship. A championship that you've only had, like, so, Mr. Price says, good effort from Jay. Priest at least got defense one, number one at the way. Judgment Day nearly fucked it up. Like, oh, JD McDonough. I thought he meant Judgment Day. JD nearly fucked it up like he always does. The JD fragments shatter continues. The split break weight continues. Well, they're not going to split until Mommy comes back. You know, they're not going to split till Rhea comes back as a big baby face. I didn't think it was a bad match. I didn't think it was particularly all that great, though, either. It was good. Made better by the crowd. Then we had the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane, who are, I want to remind you, or were, the WWE Tag Team Women's Champions, versus Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Now, what's one thing you know about being champion? To me, if you are champion, you come out last. There have been exceptions to this. I know that at WrestleMania 5, Macho came out first, so they get the big pop for Hogan. And there's been that throughout the years. It really killed me, though, when the Kabuki Warriors came out, and not only were they first, but they did an ad read. For the, like, come on, guys, at least try and present them as the champions, as a threat, as people that are going to win the match. But no, they got an ad read while they were coming out. They look great. They wrestle well. Well, I say that. We'll get to it when I talk about that. And then Bianca and Jade come out and they get a massive ovation. And those two are stars, don't get me wrong. And they've got colour-coordinated outfits. And they sort of sit there and go like, well, I wonder who's winning this. Is it the guys the company don't seem to care about? Or is it the guys that have the big entrance and everyone loves? I really hate that ever since she got called into the main roster, ever since Oscar's got called into the main roster, she's never been treated as quite the buzzsaw she was in NXT. To me, you could disagree, but in NXT, it was insane. You went in there and you lost because she was that good. And I'm not saying she needed a huge winning streak or that kind of thing. It's just, you know, first WrestleMania, she loses to Charlotte Flair. And it's just, anytime there needs to be, oh, this match needs to be good, ah, she'll come in there with Oscar, she'll be great. She's just never presented in that way of like, oh my God, stay out the way, it's Oscar. Is it too late? To rehab her to the point where you can make her the killer of the division. And Kairi Sane, I don't know, man. She's just not clicked back into WWE style. I come with a theory in my head that she's hurt herself and she realises she can't do this much longer.
So she went back to WWE for some money, and fair play to her. But she's just not kicked back in that style. And between her and Jade Cargill, who is rough still in the ring, some of this match turned, as JR might say, bowling shoe ugly. There was a lot of miscommunication. And that's cool. Like, these things happen. But, like, Jade, if you're going to turn Jade into the thing you're trying to, she needs to look incredible every time she goes out there. And say what you will about AEW, but, like, they certainly made sure that she didn't get exposed. But then again, you know, WWE are going to want her to do longer matches, which they should do. This, again, this wasn't bad. It was just rough in the middle and a foregone conclusion. Mr. Process, at least Damage Control are all on Raw. When is Dakota going to get a damn solo title run? I'd say never. Dakota Kai, I think they're going to look at her and say, guess her too much. It's not. Which is a shame. But I don't think Damage Control are much longer for this world. I think they'll split them up. They might all be on Raw, but I don't think they'll... Because, let's be honest, that's their women's division. Quite a lot of it. So you don't want them all teamed up. You want them to face each other. But again, this was, not a bad match. Not a bad match at all. I was very impressed with the closing where Jay just threw Kairi around like she weighed nothing. But and just that was the finish. She just demolished her with Jaded. And when she can do stuff like that, she looks amazing. I completely understand why the company are, this is it, this is the one. It'll be ridiculous. Then we had, like, I think it was now that we have an advert for the King and Queen of the Ring. So, the Raw qualifiers, Mr. Price says Raw qualifiers for tomorrow. Did they say that, or are they just all the Raw qualifiers? Because it will be Drew versus Finn Balor, Kofi Kingston versus Rey Mysterio, Ricochet versus Ilya Dragunov, and Gunther versus Sheamus. Maybe I do need to practice people's names. Yellow Lorry. I can't even do that. I can appreciate that those are the brackets, but did they say they were all for tomorrow? That's crazy. What a great show it's going to be tomorrow. Then you've got Ilya... and yet, as you rightly say, we could be getting Ilya versus Gunther on Raw. I do not want that on Raw. I want that on pay-per-view. I want it to get 20 or 30 minutes. I want them to beat the hell out of each other. Don't put it on Raw where we get 10. SmackDown's ones haven't been announced yet. And on the women's side, we've got Zoe and Ivy, Shayna and Zelina, Lyra and Azuka, and Io and Natty. Like, it's going to be a great tournament, and my only problem with that kind of thing is don't give them the king gimmick, or don't give them the queen gimmick. If they want to do it, cool. But, like, there's nothing more loserish than being like, now you're the king. Okay, I'm the king. That is now an achievement that I can talk about. Don't stick him in a robe and a crown. Would have killed Austin, so they didn't do it. Would have killed Bret Hart, so they didn't do it. But they did it to people like Sheamus and flipping Baron Corbin. Mr. Price, this King of the Ring general. Personally, I think who do I think is going to win? I'd put it on Gunther, but again I wouldn't make him King Gunther, and I'd put it on Tiffy Tiffy's on SmackDown, yeah? Tiffy's on SmackDown. I'd put it on Tiffy. Tiffany Stratton. Now her coming out in a big tiara and claiming that she's
not so much royal, but a queen. Maybe like a beauty pageant queen or something, or a beauty queen. And that could be a good gimmick for her. But it's up to the character. But yeah, those should be very good shows. And then we had the final match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. We had Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. Before I get there, we've had the Emperor Gunther. See, anytime somebody mentions Emperor, I go back to Star Wars. I don't want Gunther turning up in a robe and trying to electrocute people. The center of the universe becomes queen of the universe for Tiff. You're right. Yes, we have Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. And they not only sang all of Cody's theme, which was great, and you could tell Cody was kind of like, all right, not everyone usually sings this bit. But when they announced the phenomenal AJ Styles, this phenomenal la 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 la, like that got, and they cut to the crowd and they were all jumping up and down, and they cut to a close up of AJ Styles, and the camera was shaking. Now, whether or not that was, you know, someone doing a little bit of a up and down, no, I think that they were on a gurney or something, and it was rattling. People were getting warnings on their phone about the decibel level in the building because it was too loud. It can damage your hearing, which is super cool. Hats off to this crowd. Hats off to doing more of this type of show, not only in a foreign country, but, foreign to WWE, but also enclosed. There wasn't a mass amount of people. It wasn't in front of hundreds, it wasn't in front of 60, 70,000. It was, 15,000. I can't remember how much they said. They did come out sometime during the show and say, this is the most profitable Backlash ever. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm kind of fed up with you saying this, though, because it just makes me go, man, this company love money. And that's what I want to cheer, you know. I want to cheer Microsoft for having the most money. I want to cheer Apple having the most money. No, just tell us it's gone really well. Stop going about how much money you're making. I don't want to know. It's cool for you guys to best talk about that in a business setting, in a shareholders meeting. Very cool. Stop coming out to your fans and be like, thank you for spending, the average ticket price is apparently €300. The average ticket price. So, it's just a very weird one. I get boasting that you've sold out and you've done very well, but stop telling us how much money you've made. It's none of our business. Unless we're shareholders and it is our business. It just feels a little, I think it was it Jerry Graham? Mike Graham's dad? One of the big promoters drove around in back in the day in the territory system, drove around in an older car, and their son was like, "What are you could afford a Cadillac? What are you doing?" He's like, "Yeah, if I drive up to these buildings, and these people are like don't have a lot of money, and they are struggling, and they're still spending the money to come here and having a good time, the last thing I want to do is rub in their face that I've got a lot of money thanks to them. I want them to think of me as, like them. I'm one of them. I don't want them to be like, oh, look at this flash so-and-so. Bonkers LFC, Gunther win king. I say Queen Naomi, she's never going to get nothing better for a while, I feel. That's a good point. Naomi is kind of stuck in the middle of, the situation. And she's good enough to get, big stuff. Tiffy could win Money in the Bank and have a pink briefcase. That's true. A bedazzled briefcase. Eddie Hickey, money, money, money is all we hear in WWE. That's kind of what I'm saying. Sooner or later, I'm going to be a bit why are you charging so much money? Is it just so you can get, this is the most profitable of these? It's very weird. Mr. Price is desperately trying to drag me back on track with the phenomenal song, the 1-2 kick out of 2 thing,
Which is, yes, every time there was a two count, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but they had a little chant because the French announce team, who have been doing this for around 20 years, will say something along the lines of one, two, only two. And that is a chant for French fans because it's become such a thing. It's like when Michael Cole goes, vintage so-and-so, or... JR would be like, oh my God, or no, Joey Styles. Commentators have their own kind of style and their own catchphrases. I think it's so cool that they've let, but these French commentators have been doing it so long, have got their own personality, and they're obviously a big deal to those fans. JR's would be Slobberknocker, you're right, Eddie Hickey. It was really, like, it was a unique card. I want to see them go back to France. I want to see, you know, every couple of years. It's one of them. It was a good match. I don't think it was a great. This is the thing. I think they were all very good matches. Well, I think they were very good matches. Is there anything that I'm going to sit there at the end of the year and go, like, that was my match of the year? No. But I tell you who's going to win my crowd of the year. I mean, Clash in the Castle at Scotland have got one hell of a piece of competition if they want to outperform this. Because this was crazy. Mr. Price is saying Italy or Spain could be on par if given a chance. And they will be. I mean, they're going to Berlin soon. I really enjoyed it, and it dragged everything up. Every person there, you could tell. Like, I can't imagine what you're like in that ring and you're getting that much reaction. It must just be like so much of a massive charge, so much of a, okay, I'll give them as much as I can. There's got to be nights where you turn up and the crowd are a bit lethargic and you go, I'll give them what I can give them, but like, stuff's going to hurt more if I've not got a lot of adrenaline going through me. So things don't work out as well. I'm not accusing anyone of being lazy. But I can imagine if there's that many people screaming and yelling and cheering for you, that your adrenaline must be insane. I doubt they slept the next day. Then you're going to go out there and do everything you can do. I think that, I really think the size of the venue helped as well. Because say what you were about stadium shows, and yes, they're massively impressive. And obviously you want that many people because of the amount of money, but there's been several WrestleManias where people, you can see people are going nuts and the crowd is just going up and out, and it did make me long for the days of Madison Square Garden, where it was just like, oh, this is going to be loud because this is WWE's home base and it's insane to think that those people can make that much noise and make things that much better. If this had been a dead crowd, I'm not saying this would have been a bad show, but it wouldn't have been as good. And it's possible it could have been bad. I really think that the SmackDown before and all that, I think the wrestlers must have just been like, oh, these guys are in. Oh, they never burnt out. I kept being like, well, this has got to be it. They've got to stop for, you know, a breather. They've got to be going to get a drink or something. And no. From opening bell to close, they were just happy to be there. They were having fun. And I've seen some people say they weren't really there for the wrestling. They were there to get themselves over. And it's like, nah, no. Because, I can understand the whole one, two, only two chant when you don't know what it is or that it means something to these people could be seen as a bit self-satisfying. And a lot of people used to say that about Brit Wrestle, that we'd have, like, if you hate so-and-so, take your shoes off and stuff like that. People would be like, yeah, but that's not for the wrestling. That's to make you guys laugh. It's like, that isn't the point. You're there to have fun. Wrestling is fun. You're there to react. So I'm all for a crowd having their own unique things. I think it could be cool. I can't wait to see. I think they're doing Italy soon. They have to be. I can see it because they have to look at this and go, what a tremendous success. What an amazing thing. They can charge whatever, seemingly. And you get crowds like that, which elevate your B shows. And they've recently announced WrestleMania for Vegas, Las Vegas. And it's things like, that's going to be a huge, massive show because it's WrestleMania. Nobody's going to care about a, let's say, I'll pull their name out of history, No Mercy. I don't know if they still do No Mercy. I can't remember. You know, but nobody used to be that you wouldn't care about, you know, the show in the middle of September, whatever it is. You'd be like, oh, it's just a B show. There won't be a B show if you're going round the world and targeting certain audiences. If you're going to Perth, Australia, and you're selling tons of tickets and they've got a hometown person or bash at the... But I still can't figure out if Gunther's citizenship will be sorted by the time Berlin rolls around. Because if it isn't, then he can't go. He has to stay within the US for a certain amount of time. I'm pretty sure. Mr. Price is saying No Mercy is now NXT. Well, there you go. Mr. Priceless, unique song parodies too. Conga chants, aiming at the right targets is relevant. People, some just don't want to have fun or are miserable as sin. I agree. But to me, this kind of using these B shows to be like, hey, you want to have fun? We're coming to Italy. We're coming to Spain. We're coming to Scotland. We're coming to the UK. We're coming to Wales. We're coming to South Africa. We're coming to Australia. You can do it once a year for everyone. The key is to then, they can't be obvious B shows after a while. Because this like using all the B show, I won't call them B, using the non-Big Four, the non-Big Five to sell to other countries will be cool for about 3 years. And then people will know it's like, nothing really happens on these shows, though. Like, now, granted, this time you had the women's title change. The women's tag title, sorry. But you've got to make sure there's enough ticking over to make those shows still feel special. They've got to feel special every time you go. And I think they can do that. Fran the Cannon, you'll need some unpredictable results going forward for sure. Yeah, this show was very predictable. Not that I'm not proud of winning the Prediction League, Mr. Priceless. Got you beat this time, I got you beat. But it was very predictable. Now, that could be said to be, hey, you've just come off Mania. It's understandable that you want to stick to the course you're setting, but you can't do that. You can't keep doing that. Just about, only just, I think you'll find I beat you by quite a large margin this time. I think. I haven't checked since. But you did beat me at Mania, so I better shut up. No, you beat me at Dynasty, so I better shut up. And you usually beat me, so I'm just rubbing it in while I can. And it's not like any of you can have a 2-11 quiz against me, because I'm not putting myself through that. See, this is the thing. It's sometimes not the Mr. Price to say, it's sometimes not too bad. Unpredictable things happening, like Tango Loa appearing, or a Clash in the Castle when we had Solo Sikoa appear. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I mean. You can't always do total changes, but you've got to have something that makes you go, that show is historically important. It's not just Mayhem in Manchester or one of the UK-only shows where nothing happened. You just knew you were going to pack out an event because it was the UK and we didn't get wrestling very often. But overall, I'd say Backlash, massive success. congratulations to the crowd. I will certainly remember them for a long time. Same as I remember Puerto Rico from the year before. I think that is a very good show, heightened by the crowd. There is one thing I have noticed, though. When it comes to Cody Rhodes, who's the next challenger? Because they've done a terrible job, in my opinion, of lining someone up for Cody to face. Who's the next guy for Cody? And then they can keep running back AJ Styles as much as they like. But, like, there's no huge heel for Cody to face. Eddie Hickey coming up with a good point. It's probably going to be the King of the Ring winner. Cool. I could see that. But at the same time, I want the King of the Ring winner to be Gunther. But I don't want Gunther facing Cody for the title just yet. Because when Gunther faces someone for the title, I want him to win it immediately. I'm loving this whole Gunther as Terminator. Mr. Priceless, Cody didn't win via Crossroads Spam, aka the Super Finisher on 2K24. Yeah, I am. Don't get me wrong, the match was good and AJ did very well, and the top rope Super Cody cutter was awesome. But one Crossroads, got it done. It was cool. Really enjoyed it. But I can't see where the next feud for Cody's coming from. Now, Cody can just do the whole fighting champions thing and he can face all comers. That's fine for a while. But I can't see who they're building up to face Cody. I guess we'll find out soon. To be fair, they've just done the draft. I don't really want to talk about the draft. I don't even think the draft was very good at all. Either night. It didn't seem to matter. It didn't seem like they had a plan. And I don't really want to be down because Backlash was so good, but what was the point in doing it? It's just like, yeah, okay. There was nothing there that made me go, that's it. That's the one. That's the big deal from this draft. To me, anyway, it didn't feel important, which is a shame. And it's made me go, if you're going to do a draft, what you need to do is this. And someone told me I'm wrong. You have a network. You are capable of going live on that network. Do a day. Do an entire day of drafts between the three brands. And you say, and you do a live stream of the different war rooms and you put them on the clock like they do the NFL. You do an NFL style draft or a, you know, a deadline day for the UK Premier League or the leagues. I think that could be so cool, especially if you have stuff like storyline stuff where you have one of the GMs go in and say, I'll give you a spot for the next 3 weeks on my show for some of your talent to be on. And just little things like that to make it feel more real. I think it could be, it might be too much, but I think if you're going to do a trading thing, especially the same week the NFL draft is on, I don't think this is the way to do it. You can show highlights of that 24-hour stream on Raw, on SmackDown, but those shows felt inconsequential. I'd have been really miffed if I'd have been at either of those shows. I didn't think much of them. Mr. Prices, they did rejig both sets of men's and women's tag divisions, and the Wyatt stuff is coming soon. Yes, true, the Wyatt 6, if that ever turns up, that will probably be Cody's big thing. Mr. Prices, also NXT this week's has Roxanne Perez defending against Chelsea Green. I can't do it. Chelsea Green had to do it. So, yeah, they've done me wrong. There is stuff. Stuff happened. It's just, you know, previous drafts, it felt like a big deal. This doesn't. And I think if you turn it into a draft day, and you just, like, turn on the network, you never know what might be happening. You do a ticker tape at the bottom. Maybe you have a few matches. I mean, you could do it at the performance center of the matches. You say, oh, they're in the performance center, not even in NXT yet. Maybe they can qualify to be on NXT. Anything just to not make it a regular thing on your TV. Tess tried to do it one time and peed myself. Is that funny? Stuff and things. Across the board, Pete and Tyler on Raw, fuck yeah. I'll always be fans of Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. They're like, watching them with a couple of hundred people in the room, if that, and seeing, like, oh, God, these guys are it. Them and Dan Maloney, I used to watch every 2 or 3 times a month. It was just like, they'd never have a bad match. You'd be like, well, when the heck is going on? They split off. LWF and LWO, huzzah. Yeah, it's just going to... It'll go around. We'll see what happens. Pete, Tyler, Gunther, Ilya, Baylor, Raw is progress all over again. That's true. That's true. But they're more seasoned now. We'll see what happens with the draft. Obviously, it doesn't technically go into effect until tomorrow night. And tomorrow night, it's already looking like it's going to have some great matches on it. So maybe I shut up. But I guess we'll see, which is kind of the point of the draft. But that's been me talking for near enough 2 hours. I've had a great time, as always. Thank you so much for listening to me. And I'll be back next week to talk to you about AEW, about WWE, about any news that comes up. Hopefully some cool stuff happens. And I will see you next time.